guys! Welcome back to Section. Today we're going to talk about more hardware. If you didn't catch hardware last week, it should be online. Yay! Cool. So here's sort of a loose agenda of what I'm going to be talking about today. I'm going to touch on the blog and news and the wiki, mostly focused on what you have to do for your homework if you haven't done that yet. And then we're going to talk about Memory Revisited, along with like the hard disk and all that, and some accessories for your computer. So, blogging is short for weblogging. Weblogging, what blogging, right? Cool. So, what we're asking you to do with the homework these last 2 weeks, or this week and last week, is to go onto the site, which I'll click in a moment, and when you find an interesting article, blog about it. So here are a few places that are my favorite to go to. And each of these I've linked to an interesting article that I found, just because I was like, oh cool, what kind of cool news is happening today? So let's first see our blog. Yes. Cool, so here's our blog. Awesome, maybe. And you can see there are a few articles from students who have already done this. And let's see what they're blogging about. Internet as a right, that sounds cool. Distributed computing. Instant messenger, ooh, that's interesting. I wonder who wins. Yahoo, right? No. Okay, well, let's see. Oh, Yahoo's not even on this list. Guess I'm an old dinosaur. Cool, so hopefully those of you who don't have a post up yet will soon join these posts ranks, I guess, if you want to call it that. And a few example of the places that you might find interesting articles, or a few examples of interesting articles, in my opinion.
Yeah. I want to write those down. Are those on the website?
Yes, all of these links will be posted on the website at latest, like tomorrow morning, but probably tonight. So here's something interesting I found. Dating site imports 250,000 Facebook profiles without permission. So you know how on Facebook, if you don't do your privacy settings right, people can just search for you? Well, they just scraped all that data, and by scraped I meant, you know, took all of it, compiled it into one giant database, and they turned it into a dating site where they use some sort of algorithm to sort of, I guess, scan your photo and put you into a category of personality, like mild or climber. I don't know how they do that, but they have an algorithm, apparently. So that's just, I'm guessing, a screenshot from their site, which, I don't know, it looks kind of sketchy to me. And then here's the article. I don't know, I guess you guys can read it on your own time. But basically, they took data from Facebook, they stuck it on their website, right here, lovelyfaces.com, and what does it say here? They used a facial recognition algorithm to match you up with certain words. That seems kind of sketchy to me, but Facebook and other people aren't very happy because they think it's like private data, like you're stealing data, but technically it's public. Anyone who goes on Facebook can search for it, so, you know. Like right here they have this quote where the creators of the website, if asked, asked about why they did this, this is apparently what they would say. I learned it by watching you, Zuck. Because Mark Zuckerberg, when he was starting Facebook, he had, I think, Face Mash, and he pretty much took the data from Harvard's own like student database, which was open to the Harvard community, and he took all that and he stuck it on his website. So, yeah, interesting article, yay, nay. Maybe. But since I talked about it, I guess maybe you won't be able to vlog about it. I guess you could, but that might be a cop-out. And then there's tech. Well, I can't really pronounce this one, but I like it. It's I go here for most of my editorials or when I want like an opinion on something. So here, this article that I kind of picked out to show you is about a couch mouse. So I'm not sure if you guys ever like sort of lie on your bed or like, slouch on the couch and you're trying to move your mouse and you find that it doesn't really move very well because the the lighting, well, I guess if you have a laser mouse, the lighting doesn't really reflect off of, you know, whatever your couch or your bed very well. So they've invented a couch mouse with like a few additional features that'll make it easier for the mouse to sort of glide on your bed or your couch or like bumpy terrain. So I thought that was kind of cool. It's tech, right? And then here are a few others, and maybe I won't click their links and show you which articles I thought were interesting from there. But let's see, Engadget and Slashdot were both on the homework page of the wiki. Engadget, I think, is particularly good for gadgets, as the name implies. So a whole bunch of like mobile phone stuff, hardware stuff, I guess. Slashdot isn't quite a news site by themselves. It's more like, in my opinion, it's like a big Reddit where people just post interesting articles. Some of them may be tech, some of them might be, you know, other sorts of interesting news like biology or something like that. Here's an interesting one I found. Woman gets revenge courtesy of Google Images. So how Slashdot works is their users post a little blurb, and then to read the full article, you usually have to like click their links. Usually they're inside the article, or the blurb rather, or they're down here. So this one is the link to the actual article from this site, which I've never really heard of, but I guess it could be cool. So here's the article. Apparently someone broke up with someone else, and then she got really angry, so she decided to upload a whole bunch of not-so-great pictures of him with, you know, captions that aren't very flattering. And then, knowing something about how Google works, or Google Images works, she did it such that when people Google him, they see all those images, and then, obviously, the family and the guy was very upset. And the place where the images were held, like, they took down the photos, but Google still had, like, a copy of it. So when people searched for the guy, they still saw the photos despite them not being there. So here's that line right here. So I'm not sure if you guys have ever Googled something and you found a cool link and you click on it and you see like a little blurb under it before you actually go there. And then when you go there, it's like, oh, this webpage not found. It's sort of that same thing. Yay. So yeah, Slashdot is a lot of fun, in my opinion, but also a big time waster if you like cruising around for news like I do. And being the gamer that I am, PCGamer.com, what? Okay, so this site is mostly about gaming, so probably not quite what we want, but there are some gems in there, like online pirates, what? Not the sea sailing ones, but the people who, you know, steal software or, you know, those sort of pirates. Not like Captain Jack Sparrow or stuff like that. So yeah, those are just a few of my favorite websites to get news, especially Slashdot, awesome. PC Gamer, maybe not so great for our purposes, but yay. And then if you want to get into sort of tech news and all that stuff, you could use like RSS feeds to make things easier if you want to keep on top of the news. I like using Google Reader, which it's linked there. Maybe I shouldn't log in. Then you'll see what I read. But yeah, if you want to keep on top of the news, you could totally check out their feeds and see what they post each day, I guess. So on to the more practical stuff, as opposed to showing you what I think is interesting. Let's talk about how to do this. So hopefully you've read through the homework's like specs and sort of bullets on how you should go about creating a post. So the first thing is, once you get to our website, you click on Add Post in the upper left corner. And you know, you might be prompted to log in if you haven't been logged in already. Then you'll be taken, hopefully, to a page like this. So this big blank white space here is where you should probably type your blog post. But there's more that you can do than just insert text. If you click that button right there, you get more options to do cool things. So let me point out some of these cool things that you can do. Right there, that's the undo and the redo button. So in case you accidentally deleted something, or if you want, if you deleted something and you wanted it back, or to undo it, you can use that. Here, mine's here, I have it shown as like unavailable because I haven't typed anything, so I haven't done anything to redo or undo anything, but hopefully after you start doing some stuff, it'll be there. And then up there, you can upload stuff, you know, like images, videos, audio, media. You can upload from your computer. If you found it on a URL somewhere, you can use that URL. Or you can see what other people have uploaded. And I guess if you wanted to, you could use, because when you upload something, it all goes into our library. So you could go to the library and use some of that. I'm not sure why you would want to do that, but it's there. And then if you're a big Word person, you could type it all up, make it pretty in Word, and then you could use that little button there to copy and paste from Word, and it should keep all the formatting the same. So if you don't like this blog interface, you could totally do it on Word if, you know, Word is better for you, and then you can just carry it on over. Yay! Questions on this? Yes?
So the Word is right there, right? With
the W? Yep, right here.
What does it mean by post tags?
We're about to get to that. So after you're done, you know, typing all your content and all that, on the sidebar on the right, or you can do it on the left, as a question was on the other side. But, well, in my opinion, the sidebar on the right is much easier to like use and navigate. So over here we have the preview button, which, you know, you can see your formatting or your media, see what your post is going to look like if you publish it. You could also save it for like 2 days later when you have time. And then here we have categories. We're asking you guys to sort of label your post using one of these categories. Interesting. Movie review is up. They're related to our class topics. And I guess if you wanted to, you can add a new category if yours isn't there, but hopefully it is. And then tags, going back to the question we had earlier. Tags are pretty much the keywords you want to give your post in case someone wants to search for it. So if I posted something about Super Mario 64, you know, I would want to type in Mario, Nintendo, maybe Super Mario 64, Nintendo 64, so that whoever wants to look up articles pertaining to, you know, Nintendo or Mario can just type that into our little search bar and find it. Yay!
Can I just add the name of it?
Yep.
That's if it's not the top part. Other categories, right?
Yes, the categories and the tags are different.
Right.
So for the tags, you just type your keywords here, separated by commas. So you could be like Mario, comma, space, Nintendo, comma, space, and then whatever else you want to put there. Okay, questions on this? Okay. And then when you're all done, publish! Otherwise, you know, it'll just be a draft and it won't be on our blog for everyone else to see. Cool. Alrighty, let's move on to the wiki. Yeah?
So how do you submit the
You just publish it. Oh, whoops.
What was the question?
The question was, how do you submit our blog post?
Whichever you're trying to write. Mm-hmm. Where on the screen does it say submit? Does it tell you that?
Okay, so the question was, how do you submit after you're done typing up your post? Well, on the sidebar on the right, there's publish. So publish is pretty much the same as submit. Publish is like, you're all done and you're ready to... Yep, just click on it. But yeah, publish. Yay! Yes, question?
What are the things with the wiki? Like, is that
a... Ooh, that's what I'm going to do next. So,
what was the question? Like, what's the wiki and the blog?
So the question is, what's the difference between like the wiki and the blog? So the blog is more for news articles, like recent things pertaining to, you know, what we're talking about in class or what we have talked about. The wiki is more sort of like a, if you want to think about it, a glossary or maybe a sort of encyclopedia built by us. So with the blog, you're asked to find an interesting article or piece of news and, you know, write about it, write your thoughts and such. The wiki, you're you're asked to pick like a term and then write an article about that term. So it's more like an encyclopedia than, you know, blogging about a news article. So here's the homework page, homework one, if you guys haven't seen it. You can go to certain sections easily by clicking these links here. So I've already talked about the blog. You can hear David talk about it too if you download the screencast. He's probably much better at this than I am. And then up here you will find, you know, a few useful websites, some of which I've shown you, and also step-by-step instructions on how, you know, you can go about making a blog post, and some other cool things like categories and post tags that I've also talked about. So next up, we're going to tackle the wiki, which you can also download a screencast for.
I tried to download the screencast, and I couldn't do it. Is there a place on the website that I can just go to?
So the question was, how do you download the screencast? Or, well, Wait, what program were you using to open it? Because
it was Firefox.
Okay, so I guess we can download the movie now and try to make it work here.
Is it on the website? The whole?
Well, so on the website you have a link to the file. So when you download the file, you get the file onto your computer,
right. And
then you should use like QuickTime to open it. So it's not like. I think it's the best one to view .movs. So you can see the extension here.
Right.
So.
But the links, are they on the website?
Yep. The link is, well, I'm on the website right now, and you can just click it, and then it'll download. Like.
So just click on that. The screencast.
Yes. You only need to click this, and it'll start downloading.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do we want to watch the screencast?
Yes.
Bring David in on here? Well, I guess you guys can do that at home. But QuickTime, .movs, that's what I use to watch it, because it doesn't look too good in like Windows Media Player. I've tried. But cool, so let's talk about the wiki. So here David tells you a lot of stuff, or I guess David and Dan tells you a lot of stuff about what a wiki is, what's it for, what you'll be asked to do. So here are a few sites that you might find useful to gather information to put on your wiki. And, you know, there's Bing, there's Google, there's Wikipedia, yay! Webopedia, also cool. And then you also have the step-by-step instructions on how to do this. And you have some guidelines on how to write your article. So basically what you should do is check out this list right here. Anything that you see in red, you can click on. Or, well, you can claim, because red means that it hasn't been taken yet. So say you wanted to do, I don't know, flash memory. You can click on it. It'll say, oh, no, there's no text in this page. This place doesn't exist. So in order to claim this, you can go to, well, I guess you have to log in first. Oops, let me do that. So once you're here, you can click edit this page. And then the first thing you might want to do is just to type something like, you know, being written or in the works or under construction, and then save it by submitting it, or, well, saving the page down here, so that no one else thinks that the page is free and they don't try to write the same article you're writing at the same time. That would be bad. So yeah, please do claim your article first before you begin writing, so we don't have any, you know, collisions and stuff. So cool. That's, where were we? That's how you claim your article. And then now let's look at a few formatting tips that I think are useful. If you want to like make your post pretty, because you could just type it in all text, that's fine too. If there's ever any formatting you want to look up, like sticking links or pictures, or, you know, text formatting like bold, definitely check out the manual. It's my favorite place to get, you know, Wikipedia markup. So here they have, you know, italics, bold. If you want to make headers for certain sections of your page, if you want to make like a line, if you want to make lists, numbered lists, they have a lot of really cool stuff, in my opinion. Some or all of which you probably don't have to use, but if you want to make your stuff pretty, and more readable. Definitely go for it. But I've taken the time to put out a few that I think might be the most useful. So for text, if you wanted to emphasize something, you could do italics. Here I have the markup name italics. And say you wanted to, if you were typing in that editing field, and say you wanted to make the word text italicized, you would put two single quotes on either side of it. And then your result would be over here. So for bold, you would put three single quotes. And then for both, you would put five single quotes. Why does this happen? Well, 2 + 3 = 5. So if you want italics and bold, i.e. both, you just, combine them, I guess. And then if, say, you wanted to, for some reason, have two single quotes, by themselves, not making anything italicized, and the wiki is thinking that you want to italicize something, you could use this. You can encase it with no wiki and / no wiki, and then you will get, your single quotes will still be there. The wiki won't interpret that as, the user wants to mark up this piece of text. So if the wiki's ever doing anything weird that you don't want it to do, this no wiki thing, might help out. Yay, and HTML tags work too! Sort of like strike through or underline, and the other ones that are on the manual. You could also stick in just HTML, but I don't know why you would want to do that. I mean, you could, but. Questions? No? Okay. Yes?
What is HTML?
HTML is sort of the markup language that web pages use to sort of format text on screen. So you know how in Microsoft Word you can just type in Times New Roman? Or you can bold it, or you can make it different colors, or you can indent it. So markup just makes the prettiness. So here's an example of HTML, which we will see more about later on in the semester. It's, there's not a lot of markup there since all it has is the word welcome, but it's not a programming language. It's a markup language, meaning it's used to, make things look pretty or change the colors of things or format them in a certain way, like bolding or italicizing. So here's a very boring web page, and its HTML is also very boring. All it says is welcome. But you'll see a more advanced and hopefully more fun example later in the semester, and you'll make one yourself, I think. That'll be fun. Cool, so some of you may be wondering, how do I stick links into my page? I want to reference this article, or I want to send the user to another place. Well, you could look on the MediaWiki wiki, and they have, all the stuff here. But I thought I'd put together a cheat sheet. So if you want an internal link, and by internal I mean a link to some other page on the wiki, say Dan's motherboard page, you could just type it like that. And I'll show you what these actually look like on the wiki in a little bit. If you wanted to link to the motherboard page, but you wanted to have the text that linked there be something different, say a surprise exclamation point, you could do this. It'll link to the motherboard page, but the text that's hyperlinked is a surprise. So I'll show you that in a bit. And if you want an external URL, cs50.net for whatever reason, you could just type it, and then the wiki will automatically link it. If you want a different label, i.e. you don't want it to say www.cs50.net, instead, if you wanted it to say cs50!, you can do that. So the formatting looks similar, but they're not quite, not quite the same. Like, one has double brackets, one has, this pipe character, this weird, straight up and down thing right here. If you wanted a different label, this one doesn't have one. It's this silly syntax that you gotta either look up or write down or memorize. I'm not a big fan, but it happens. And then, if you've seen Dan's motherboard page, he actually has references. He cites his works and stuff, which I thought was pretty cool. I didn't know how you do that, but I went into his page, and I'll show you how you can do that, and figured it out. So here's how he did it. Basically, say you took something, you wanted to cite cs50.net, and you want to call it Great Resource. Well, to, you know, stick it in as a reference, you can do ref and then backslash ref. And then you can do this for all your resources. And when you want to display them, you can have this. Now, I'll show you an example, so don't worry if you don't really get it right now. But yeah, I'll come back to all this and show you how you actually do it on the wiki. So for images, there's sort of a kind of linking. You're linking in an image. You're displaying the image there. How you want to do this is, if you had a URL, you can use that, but you can just upload onto our wiki, which means that, you know, it'll always be there so long as we keep it there. You can upload it, remember the file name, and then you can link it onto the page using something that looks like this, where pick name is obviously, you know, your picture title. And the extension, whatever yours is, should be there instead of .jpg. Cool, so let's try this. We're going to try this by copying all of this. And then sticking it on a page. So let's say, oh, I have to log in. Wait, no. Yes. So let's just create a random page right now called example. And just to make this look better. Okay. So here's all that cheat sheet I just showed you. Let's preview it on the page. Here's the internal link written using this. You can click it, which I'll open in a new tab. And you'll see Dan's motherboard page. Ah, awesome, which is the example given on the homework page. But yay, and Dan has this nice picture right here. He has these references. What? How do you do that? Well, an easy way of finding out is by... Okay, let me log out first. Is by viewing the source. So here you can see, you know, the text and the markup that makes up Dan's page. So if you were to wonder how he did the reference thing, you can look right here. And that's the bit of text, the bit of formatting that he uses. Which I just showed you, but and then he puts his references here, as you can see. And then if you go back, you can sort of match up the words with the words in the source, and you can sort of see what he's doing, how he's marking this up, how he's linking things, how he adds the photo. Where's his photo? Let's see. So here's his picture. He just puts the URL there, and it shows up. Cool. So you can sort of use other people's pages as maybe a template or an example on how you can format your own wiki page. So if we go back to our example, you know, there you go. You can see the same page, just a different, you know, text label. Nah. Well, apparently Wiki doesn't like me. Okay. So yeah, that's how you can do it. Questions? No questions? Wait, I should show you how to upload images. Okay. So let's do this. Where is my page? So let's say we're still on example, fresh page. Say I wanted to upload a file. You just click here, upload file. Let's choose a file from my computer. So I have something set out on my desktop. Where is it? Aha. So let's upload this photo of Foxtrot, my favorite comic. So you can type, don't alter this right here, that would be bad. You can type a summary of what it is for, you know, later reference. Check out the settings if you want to. But ultimately, you want to upload the file. So when it's uploaded, you'll get a page that looks sort of like this. So yay, my photo, or not mine, I guess. This image is now on the wiki. Now you have to stick it on your page somehow. Like, if you don't do anything else, your page won't have this image on it. So to make sure your page has this image, you want to remember this right here, this first line, which is pretty much just your image name preceded by file and then colon. And then you would go to the page that you want to stick it on, which was example for us. Then you would paste it. And I think it's single brackets. Let's show preview. Maybe it was double brackets. Show preview. Ha! And then we have our image! Awesome! So yeah, if you're wondering how to stick on an image that you have on your computer, here we are. And then to make sure other people can view this and make sure you don't accidentally delete anything, you can save your page. And now it's on the wiki. And now other people can see this example page with Foxtrot. So when you click preview, it's only showing you a preview. It's not actually published on the web, or it's not actually like saved somewhere. So if you don't actually save the page, it won't be, it won't be on the web. It'll disappear once you navigate elsewhere. So do save your work, but preview if you want to see what it's going to look like before you actually, save it for the world to see. So yay, we have an example page. Awesome, yay, nay. Questions on how to do this? Okay. So yeah, and once again, if you see something on someone else's page that you want to do, like post an image or references or whatever, you can definitely just go and view their source and follow their example. Not stealing, not what Bill Gates said and Steve Jobs said in our movie today. And then don't forget the submit form. It'll ask you, beside asking you for the URLs of your posts, it'll ask you some other questions like what computer you have, what operating system you're running, just for statistics. We like to know out of curiosity. Yes? It asks for both, so I can show you it right here, if I still have it up. Okay. Let's go back. Okay, homework. Homework one, submit. So the link is right here. So here's the link right here at the bottom, under the submit title, or heading, I guess. And then once you get here, it'll ask you for your name and all these questions here. Some stuff we'd like to know for curiosity's sake. And then it also asks you for the URL of your wiki post and your blog post, just in case, there's some sort of error if we can't find it. It's good to document it somewhere. So make sure you do that. Submit is very important. Cool. So it's due by noon this coming Monday. Good luck! Hehe. Okay, let's talk about possibly more interesting stuff. So last week we had a question about whether the amount of memory you could put in your computer was limited by the hardware, i.e. the physical slots on your machine, or by something else. So we did a little bit of sleuthing, or remembering, I guess. So do you guys have an idea of why someone might want more RAM? Possibly infinite RAM, if possible?
So you can do multiple things at once.
Yes, so you can do multiple things at once. So more RAM lets you run more programs simultaneously. So why not just have infinite RAM? Well, if you had infinite money, I guess. But for those curious, if you wanted to install additional RAM, I've linked a page here that I think is sort of useful, sort of guides you through how to add more memory, more RAM to your computer. Just like a random side note. But yes, if you want to install more RAM to, be able to run more programs at once, you can go there. Awesome! RAM equals more programs running at the same time. Well, same time. So going back to the question of why we can't have infinite RAM, there is a limit. Not just by the hardware, but also because of the software. And this is because memory is byte addressed. So each byte in your memory has an address. Something like 0x00642, something like that. So each byte has an address. And on 32-bit machines, which I'm assuming most of us have, because 64-bit is the new thing and it's just coming in, it means that there are 32 bits for each byte's address. What does this mean? Well, this this leads to the question, how many bytes can be addressed with 32 bits? Yay, following, I hope. But there's a second equivalent question that you could ask, and it's there. And since you have 32 bits, and each bit can be a 1 or a 0, to find out how many addresses or how many bytes you can address, you just do 2 raised to 32, which is 4.3 billion. So pretty much 4 gigabytes. So on a 32-bit machine, you can address 4 gigabytes worth of memory. So the processor will just only recognize and or use up to 4 gigabytes. So if you install more, you know, if you install in 10 gigabytes, well, you know, you're going to have some slack there because some of that won't be used since your, you know, your 32-bit machine can only use up to 4 gigabytes, up to. There are other things that might take away from this 4 gig. So, thanks. So, in trying to solve this problem, because, you know, programs are getting bigger, Adobe Premiere takes an enormous amount of space, as does Photoshop CS5 or 6 or whatever they have now. Crazy space. So in an attempt to resolve this, the world created 64-bit machines, which, like what it sounds, Similarly, like our 32-bit, it uses 64 bits for each byte's address. And then that leads to the question, how many bytes can you address? Like, how many bytes can we, you know, utilize? So 2 to the 64, 16 exabytes. What the heck is an exabyte? Well, it's a lot of bytes. And that is pretty much 17 billion gigabytes. Wow, awesome, right? That's like infinite RAM, right? Well, not quite. So the people making your computers and your OSs thought that was a ridiculous amount, and you know, people probably won't be using that anytime soon. And by anytime soon, I mean ever. So the amount of memory you can have on your 64-bit machines are actually, you know, capped also by hardware, i.e. how many slots you have, like your 32-bit, but also by your operating system. So what I mean by this is, here's a table for Windows Vista. Apparently, if you have a x86, which is our normal 32-bit machine, you know, the most you can have is 4 gigs, you know, for all the different types of Vista. Well, except Vista Starter, I guess, because it's Starter. But on your 64, x64 is what they call it, you can have up to 128 gigs, well, depending on your version of Vista. So yeah, the software also, you know, limits how much memory you can use on your computer. So you could put in like a whole bunch of gigs, but your operating system might not recognize it, and then you wouldn't be using it, and you should probably put that memory in some other computer. So yay! Hardware and operating system. Hardware and software caps how much memory you can have in your computer. So this is just for fun. You guys don't need to like memorize this for a test or anything. I just thought, you know, maybe if you guys are planning to go out and buy infinite amount of memory, you might want to know about this beforehand. And then speaking of memory, last week I mentioned something about RAM being volatile, but that's not quite the whole story. So here's another one of those, like, oh, this is so cool, in my opinion. Hopefully you guys find it cool, too. But RAM is volatile. Yes, that is true. But not quite as fast as we'd like to think, or maybe we'd like it to be. Why, I'll explain in a moment, but this is what I mean by not as quickly as we'd like. So say we stored this image, you know, in our computer, in our RAM. We loaded this into RAM. The original looks like that. And then say you powered off your computer, or you turned off the power to the RAM. After 30 seconds, the image looks like this. 60 seconds, you can still sort of see it. Yeah, faintly see it. And then after about 5 minutes, you know, you pretty much can't see it. So the implications this has is, say you left your computer just running, say your laptop, you left it running, and you go to the bathroom or something. Someone walks by and swipes your computer, and they pull the plug because they can't take it with them. So if they wanted to, they could look into your RAM within, I don't know, say before 5 minutes, maybe 30 seconds, and get the memory off of that and, you know, do bad things. But 30 seconds, 60 seconds, really small amount, right? It doesn't really, probably won't happen, right? Well, some people did some research at Princeton, and they found that if you cool the RAM, if you freeze it, if you use one of those keyboard dusters, the cold ones, it actually stays in the volatile memory for a lot longer. Like, they tried it, and after 10 minutes of not having, like, electricity, like, the image was still, like, the original. So if somebody really wanted to steal your sensitive information in RAM, which usually is not encrypted, they could, you know, walk over when you're not here, freeze your RAM, and then go read it somewhere. Yay, nay. So you could totally click this link, and they have this awesome video that I'm not going to show, but I mean, I thought it was pretty cool. Maybe we'll touch on this in our security unit, but they talk about how, you know, people, they actually, like, show you, they actually sort of take the RAM out and freeze it. So here's them freezing it. And then they test it, they take it out to test it in another machine. So if a thief wanted to, they could, like, do this, stick it in a different computer and read off the stuff there. And then they find, you know, after 10 minutes, it still looks the same, what? So yeah, I'll let you guys, if you're interested, watch the video. It's pretty cool. But yeah, this is what I was talking about last week when I was trying to say that RAM is volatile, but not quite. Well, I mean, it is in the long run, but not quite so fast. So just a fun fact, you know, just so you know, if you're leaving your laptop in random places, you might want to think about this, I guess, or just think about other people stealing your laptop, I don't know. Anyway, let's talk about the hard disk. I.e. revisit. So last week we saw in David's lecture that you have platters. They look sort of like this, except they're closer together and smaller and encased in like encased in a container. And then you saw that the arms sort of move together because they're all stuck on one apparatus. And then here's a read-write head, which uses pulses of electricity to either change the field of magnetic particles, i.e. write, or to read the magnetic field off of the particles, well, read. So yeah, just a refresher. And a really cool close-up picture of what these heads look like. And then, segueing from that, other disks. Well, we saw the floppy disk, which was pretty much like the hard disk. So, you know, magnetic particles, pulses of electricity. But what about CDs and DVDs? Do they work the same way? Well, not quite. They're optical. What does this mean? Well, I'll get back to the optical bit in a little bit, but they use pits to store data. So imagine you have this flat surface, right? It's all the same. If you could somehow mark up that surface, i.e. with pits, in a certain way, you can, you know, put some sort of data on it. So these pits are made like they're physically on CDs that you buy from, well, say you went to a music store and you bought a CD, the pits would be here like physically like made. And there's also chemical pits where like with CD rewritables, they have this sort of phase changeable chemical that can melt and make like different pits on it depending on the laser strength. And maybe that's a bit too technical, but I guess if you're curious, you can just know that the pits are made physically and chemically, depending on what type of disk you have. They can be dual layered, which means you're gonna have like two sort of stacks of information on one disk, and you can read them off using, well, I guess, using a laser pinpointed in different distances. So here you can sort of see the pits. This one is dual layered, so you'll see there's two layers of pits. But basically when the light hits a pit, it reflects differently than if it just hit the disk, the smooth disk itself. So that's how the computer tells, you know, oh, this is a pit, or if, you know, oh, there's something here, versus, oh, there isn't. Read it with light. The finer your laser, the more data you can pack on a disk, because you can read, you know, finer detail, you can read more pits. You don't need as big a spacing. So here's a CD. The spacing is here, shown as 1.6 micrometer. And then for a DVD, you can see that it's much smaller, 0.74 micrometer spacing in that direction. And interesting fact, you know how they came out with Blu-ray? I might have mentioned this before, but a blue-violet ray is actually in the works. I don't know if they're going to try to roll it out because, well, they just put out Blu-ray, in my opinion. But Sony and a Japanese university is thinking about blue-violet laser, which means you can pack even more information on a disc. Since it's finer, you can stick on more pits and then read them off. Yay, blue-violet? Maybe. And then David also talked about peripherals, an example being an external optical drive. Say your Mac doesn't have, you know, a place to read CDs or DVDs. You can buy something that connects to your laptop and then allows you to read them. So a loose definition is an attachable device that expands a computer's capabilities. So on the back of your PCs, your computers, you might see something like this, where each of these ports allow different things to be connected. So like the purple and the green for your mouse and your keyboard, a serial port, which is kind of, in my opinion, outdated, VGA port, what I'm using now to hook my laptop up to the projector, and USB ports, yes, my favorite. Awesome. And of course, ports for your mic and headphones. Wait, what? Oops, didn't mean to do that. So other examples are your printers, your microphones, your webcams, external hard drive. My favorite, personally, is this. Now you might say, what? This doesn't connect to your computer. Well, indeed it does with this. So that's my favorite. Since, you know, I like gaming, I have tons of these games on my computer as well as home, but they're like the same, so no piracy going on there, for real. Yay! And that concludes our section on hardware. Questions, comments, yes?
So, like, everything in the computer is zeros and ones, right? Like, if you, like, made it all down to the basics?
Yes, so...
Like, yeah. Well, on the CD, when they do the lasers, like, are they zeros and ones when they indent stuff?
Yes, so the question was, since everything... on the basic level for the computer is zeros and ones, is it the same for the CDs? And I want to say yes, because like a pit could represent either one or zero, and no pit can be the other one. So I think so. Yay, other questions, comments? Yes.
My other question is, I understand how you can make like a text into zeros and ones. Mm-hmm. I don't understand how you can like record someone's voice.
Yeah, okay, so the question was, how might a computer sort of encode a person's voice, like a sound file, I guess? I think there are certain like frequencies and wavelengths and, I'm not really a music person, but all those little characteristics of a sound clip or audio that a computer can encode. Like maybe the intensity of the sound, when it happens, the duration, and all of those together would make, you know, your audio file. So, other questions? Well, hopefully, I hope with our hardware unit, you hopefully won't end up like this cat who doesn't apparently know what's going on in his computer and is trying to find out in a very not helpful way. Other questions, concerns, lulls at the cat? Well, if not, then thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Yep.